That's it, Tom. A month of 2021 is done. We are firmly footed in the year that is 2021.
And how is it? How is it compared to 2020?
A little of the same, maybe.
But at least we've got some games coming up to sort of take our mind off things, I hope. What's coming out, Matt?
Oh, a couple of things, Tom. Let's see. It's Tom and Matt Attack.
Yeah, it's a good point to raise. I don't know if this year is as full-packed with exciting new releases as maybe last year was. What do you think?
I think that this year is probably... Let me rephrase. I think this year, much like the year of cinema, much like the year of TV shows and everything else, will be a slow drip feed of video games, much like it used to be. I don't think there are going to be as many big things this year as perhaps we are usually used to. I don't think, for example, if you were to look at the cinema listings of 2019, that we're going to get like 12 Marvel movies all piled on top of each other and some DC thrown in. I just don't think that's realistic, given the impact of the pandemic, obviously, that is still ongoing at this point. Mm-hmm. And the fact that 2020, yes, things came out, but a lot of stuff was delayed, a lot of stuff was pushed back, because I think publishers were realizing, okay, the change to work from home and everything else we need to do is not as sustainable from this work from home environment. So I think you saw some games like Far Cry pushed into 2021, even though Ubisoft was like, well, we made enough in this quarter that we don't need an extra game. I also think it's perhaps to plug a bit of the calendar year a little bit, to go like, well, we haven't really got a lot coming out. We should just put this out and this out. Mm. Interestingly, though, I don't think that will affect small teams as much. So I think...
Because they've probably been quite busy, I imagine. The smaller teams are able to work together, or even like these games that are developed by an individual.
Yeah.
Perhaps they've been able to put more time into these things and,
Well, I mean, I also just think that a lot of small companies, from what I understand and talking to people who have worked at indie game studios over the years, is that generally you're probably working remotely anyways. Yes, I know indie studios still have spaces and everything else like any other company, but I do think perhaps they were a bit set up better to deal with this, and I'm curious to see where that then lands, and that if this will be the year of big indie games, because AAA games won't necessarily be out in the same force.
However, there are a few on the horizon.
There are.
And only this month we're getting, or have got, I'm not sure actually, have we got it already? It's Hitman 3.
Yeah,
so
Hitman
3's
out.
So we're so out of touch, aren't we, with modern
No,
movies.
I know
at
Hitman
3's
out. I'm
Hitman
aware that this
out.
Game
yeah.
is in the public domain, yeah.
And it's out on everything. It's a very weird time, isn't it, for games? Because you've got it released on the old systems and the new systems and the PC.
Well, I think because Hitman 3, if I remember correctly, was slightly pushed back into 2021.
Okay.
So I think it's an intentional choice to kind of come out when nothing else is really coming out.
Well, that's right, yeah. It's got January to itself, basically, in terms of big releases anyway.
Pretty much, yeah.
And, yeah, it's been getting some good reviews, as far as I know, and as far as I've seen, at least. And I think performance-wise, it's been handled better than some other recent multi-format releases, which we will mention. No names.
I mean, that is what it is, right? I think that some of the games that will be released in this coming weird transitional period between this console and the new current gen of PlayStation 5, Xbox Series X will some of them will be hinky, some of them will be great. I mean, we saw this last time with the 360, like Titanfall played just as well on the 360 as it did on the next-gen consoles, so...
Yeah, it's not like a rule that everything that's coming out now is going to be like Cyberpunk 2077, so...
Yeah, I mean, hey, also global pandemic, right? Like, that's, yeah. That's kind of what we're talking about, is that it was a difficult year to ship games last year. And I think it will continue to be an increasingly difficult year to ship. Because, I mean, obviously, you and I both don't have children. Like, we are not in the sphere of having to home educate during all this stuff. And, like, talking to family members, talking to friends who do have children who are in the weird situation of having to play both kind of teaching assistant and be their regular self and parent and all this other stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't seem like a lot of the tech to enable home learning is there. And I imagine it's probably the same way for video games. I imagine that a lot of the systems and stuff they're using, like, yes, if they're using like a Trello board for project management, it's fine. Yes, emails still work. But I imagine having large files that I can imagine would be 3D models and everything from a video game side,
yeah,
is probably quite challenging to work with from a remote distance.
I would agree. Totally different sort of challenge right now.
And so, you know, it must be very difficult to ship work in this time. So I guess, you know, I'll give Cyberpunk some benefit of the doubt, even though to be fair, from what I've read, it perhaps isn't really that
deserved. Well, what it was developed for the high-end machines, the PC, high-end PC, and sort of downgraded. As far as I understand it, because I did read an interview with developers of Biomutants coming out in May, yeah. Now it has a release date, finally. This is an action adventure, maybe even RPG style. I don't want to say RPG, but it is a real-time action RPG, I think.
Do you not want to put yourself off buying it? Is that the issue?
Yeah, that's exactly... I think it looks really cool. But they were saying how this game was developed for the last generation of consoles. Of course, it's going to get released on the new gen, and you're going to see some improvements, but basically it wasn't, you know, created for the highest end. But yeah. There will also be a high-end PC version. But at the same time, the core of the development is for the last gen, which I think is probably how it should be right now. I think that's a sensible way of doing it. Nice to know that when that game comes out, hopefully it will be running very nicely on the PS4 and Xbox One.
Yeah, I mean, you would hope so, right? And I think... I mean, to be fair to CD Projekt Red, right? Like, they have always been a PC developer, like The Witcher and everything else that they've ever
made. Oh, yeah, they have a history. Yeah, PC of course. First. I know about The Witcher 3 and its console releases not being perfect, so...
I mean, to be fair, not as non-perfect as this one. God, let's not talk about Cyberpunk. Everyone's
I think it's been given far too much of a spotlight. We've got some fun stuff coming out in February. There is the complete edition of Neo, is that what it's called?
Neo, yes.
I thought I was saying it wrong because I could only think of the singer. But there's a complete remastered edition of that coming out for PC and the next gen, like PS5 at least.
Yeah.
But for me, what I'm most excited about is Super Mario 3D World.
When is that out?
That is out in February, the 12th of February. But what I'm excited about is not the original game so much, as much as I like that game. It's another case of...
It's Bowser's Fury, right?
Yeah, it's Bowser's Fury, which is what they're calling like an expansion or an extra bit. That's actually, I've read, playable from the start. So you don't have to complete 3D World again to be able to play it. You can go in there. And it's an open world environment.
Oh, weird.
Yeah, but with the same gameplay mechanics as the regular 3D World games. So Mario hasn't got his triple jump or backflip or things like that, but he's now in an open world, which is more comparable to something like the levels in Sunshine, for instance, or Odyssey.
I was going to say I would have gone Odyssey rather than Sunshine, but that's maybe...
I don't know why I said Sunshine. So... I think people are intrigued how that's going to play. Obviously, with Mario's sort of more limited moveset in such an open world. But, you know, I'm sure Nintendo know what they're doing. And what I want to know, actually, is how much of a game there is within Bowser's Fury. How many hours of gameplay are there? And for once, I'm asking about that because I really resent having to buy games again, in a way.
I mean, that's fair. I believe it or not, I didn't own 3D World because you had it when you were still living together.
Oh, so you never owned it?
I do own it now. I owned it after the fact. I bought it cheap in a flea market when I saw someone had a Wii U and they were trying to sell the whole thing as a bundle. And then I said, well, I'll give you 50 krona just for this. And they were like, yeah, okay, cool. So I got it that way. I started playing it with my wife because at the time we were playing things like Woolly World and stuff on our Wii U. So I'd started playing 3D Land and we were quite enjoying it. But obviously then we got it on place and so you naturally kept your disc of that and so we didn't finish it. And so I'm very curious actually to pick it up and play it with my wife because I think that would be quite a fun thing for us to do and it's quite a nice game from what I remember.
It is, and now I guess it's got a portable aspect being on the Switch. So that sort of sweetens the deal a little bit for me. It's such a good game that the ability to play it portably might be quite nice. And then with Bowser's Fury, it might be the first one of these re-releases, other than Mario 3D All-Stars, that I'm actually going to pick up for the Switch.
Yeah, I haven't picked up any of them, actually, you know, I'm thinking
about it. No, I'm not Pikmin 3, not New Super Mario Brothers. There's been a plethora of them. Captain Toad, Donkey Kong Tropical Freeze, yeah.
I have been tempted. I mean, I did buy the follow-up to Woolly World that I can't remember the name of.
Oh, Crafted World, is it?
Crafted World, yeah, but we didn't end up playing it, weirdly enough.
I played a demo of Crafted World and wasn't left suitably impressed, so I never picked it up. But at the same time, I'd still like to give it another go.
Yeah.
Hmm.
I don't know. Eventually I will play that game, I think. I think this will be the year where we'll be looking for stuff to do and go, okay, cool, we're going to play Crafted World. But
yeah, and let me know what it's like, and maybe I'll get it. But it's like one of those original Switch games, isn't it? Made for the Switch. Yeah. It's not on the Wii U, and it's Nintendo, and I don't own it. And that feels wrong to me.
Yeah, I mean, I don't necessarily feel that way about these remakes.
Yeah, I don't feel like I need to own any of them. But Bowser's Fury's got me interested in this re-release of 3D World.
Okay. I mean, the thing that actually caught my eye this month that will be coming out in February is, as you know, Persona 5 Strikers will be released.
Ah, okay. You know, Eurogamer's release list isn't very comprehensive.
Really?
It
is that not on
there? Doesn't even mention Persona.
Interesting. Yeah, Persona 5 Strikers is out on the 23rd, I believe, of this month.
Okay. Well, the big release it has here for the 18th is Far Cry 6 on all platforms. That seems to be the, other than Mario, the biggest release in February.
Yeah.
Well, you know, that'll probably be good. I mean, they're good.
Yeah.
Far Cry. But Persona's the one that's caught your eye.
And I mean, this is a Musho game, right? Like, this is your Koei Tecmo doing a spin-off of a popular game the same way they did for Hyrule Warriors, and they've undoubtedly done for countless franchises over the years. But the thing that really has me intrigued about Persona 5 Strikers is that it, from all intensive purposes, from what I've seen of preview content on places like Kotaku, it seems like it's pretty much like a sequel to Persona 5.
Yeah, I'm wondering what it is exactly. Is it action?
It is an action game, yeah. It isn't a straight-up JRPG like Persona 5 was. It is an action game. It is a Mushu game. You are still going around as Joker and everyone else.
Oh, you said Mushu,
and you're,
yeah. So,
you're fighting
yeah.
lots of enemies. But it seems to have ported a lot of the day-to-day mechanics of a Persona game that you would have experienced in Persona 4. Like, you go to school, you do different lessons, you have friendships you can build up, and all of this cool stuff. And as I mentioned with Persona 5 Dancing All Night, I am totally there. Playing any game with those characters is a bit of a... It's like a walk down memory lane in a way that I think Final Fantasy VII Remake was. And especially experiencing new content with those characters and seeing new situations and stuff, I'm totally there for. So I'm going to definitely pick that one up.
I'll be intrigued to find out your thoughts on that. I won't be getting it myself, but nevertheless, I would like to know what it's all about.
To be fair, right, like there are bits of Persona 4 you liked, correct? Like you.
Oh, Persona 4, yes, very much so. I mean, I like the routine of it. I like, because we talked about this, I think, on a previous podcast in relation to Shenmue, the routine of the day-to-day living in a world and feeling kind of like you know the places that are in that world and you get to know the characters very well, and it's sort of very ordinary life. Yeah. But then it gets extraordinary, obviously, in the case of Persona 4. But yeah, Persona 4 I thought was also very well written as well.
Yes, and 5 certainly is. And like I said, Dancing All Night and all of these other games are as well.
Yeah.
I mean, there are other games coming out. Far Cry 6 will be out in February as well, right?
Yes, Far Cry 6 is February. And in March, Blood Bowl 3. Don't know if you've ever played any of the Blood Bowl games.
I have played quite a lot of the tabletop board game of Blood Bowl.
They're actually pretty good. I played
the first one. I had the first Blood Bowl 2.
I've played the second one on the Xbox, and that's pretty good. I don't know what a third installment can really bring to that franchise, but it'd probably be fine.
Hey, I mean, the Games Workshop games, for all intents and purposes, have been pretty good, right? Like, I think...
Well, I think a couple of the Space Marine ones weren't so good. Hey, Matt?
I mean, recent Games Workshop games. I'm talking Vermintide. Like Vermintide and stuff good, like that.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I'm sure that would be good if that's something that floats your boat.
There is a big, well, for me, it's quite a noteworthy release. And I think it's coming out very soon because there's a demo available on the Switch right now. And that's Balin Wonderland or Balin Wonderland. I'm not sure how to pronounce it.
Oh, is that also on the European store? The demo?
You can download it. I downloaded it the other day.
Good, because I downloaded the Japanese version.
Oh, this is out on the 26th of February. Not February, sorry. March. 26th of March, and the demo available now. And it's an interesting experience playing it on the Switch, because obviously I'd previously seen the footage that was shown, I think, in an Xbox sort of showcase or PS5, I forget which one it was. And
I think it was Xbox.
It was quite a pretty looking game. Obviously, not quite so good looking on the Switch. I mean, I don't know how, if you've seen any of it in action running on the Switch or not.
No, I haven't. I didn't open it yet. I downloaded it. I was playing something else, so I'll talk about in a bit.
It's a comprehensive demo, and, well, it's not... Visually, in terms of design, I quite like it, the character design, especially, because it's by... I can't remember the name of the guy, but the guy who designed the characters for Knights.
Yeah. It's Yuji Naka, isn't it?
The design... Game design, I guess, is Yuji Naka. And it's pretty good, but it's pretty by the numbers. I don't think you'll be bowled over by it by any means, but it's perfectly playable. There's an odd sort of stiffness to the way the characters move in the world, which it doesn't feel as... Mario's got a momentum when he moves around. He feels like he's got some sort of weight. He feels... It's pleasing to control Mario in a game. The character you play as in Balin Wonderland isn't particularly nice to control, but there is some variety in there because you collect different suits which give you different abilities, you know, not so dissimilar from Mario really, but those suits do add a lot of much needed variety to the gameplay, and you've kind of got to think how you use a suit to get to the next complete the next objective in the open world levels.
Right.
In that respect, it's like something like Mario 64. You've got these trophies everywhere in the level, and to get a particular trophy, you might just have to transform into this particular suit, like Banjo-Kazooie with the Mumbo and how he turns them into different things.
Yeah.
You won't be bowled over by the visuals, so at least not on the Switch. But the design is at least, you know, pretty nice.
it's reminiscent of that kind of weird Yuji Naka, Sega Saturn vibe that
absolutely. Yeah, and I wish I could remember the name of the artist, because obviously he's involved with Sonic as well. He may even be the guy who originally created Sonic the Hedgehog, I think.
But, I'm not sure.
It's most similar to Knights in terms of the design of the characters. So if you enjoy that kind of design, then there's a heck of a lot of that in this.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, like, that's kind of the standout thing of anything I've seen of this game, is I was like, boy, that sure looks a lot like Knights. So
it's the best thing about the game, I have to say.
Okay, well,
it's
that's
a character
not,
design.
That's not great, is it? I mean, some of the stuff, I'm just looking at a Game Informer list. After you said that Persona wasn't on the list that we were using, I quickly gave it a Google and saw anything else. Are you interested at all in Little Nightmares 2? I know you quite like the first game.
Well, I did quite like the first game. However, I never finished it. So I won't be getting Little Nightmares 2 until I go back and actually play through that.
Fair enough. There's one or two little retro games that have been gotten a new lick of paint in Turrican Flashback, which is out on the 29th of January. So it's actually out as of this
morning.
It's
out now, yeah. It's Turok, what am I saying?
Turrican.
Turrican, 1 and 2 and Mega Turrican, and I can't remember, it's 4 of them anyway.
Yeah.
But maybe you can sell your copy of Mega Turrican now. Now you can download it
already sold my copy of Mega Turrican. Yeah, because it went very expensive and I sold it to a friend for a relatively decent price, but not as ridiculous as the asking price was.
Well, Turrican Flashback's £25 on the Switch.
I think, to be fair, like, if you would like to play Turrican, that is probably the best way to go about it. I mean,
well, you can't download Mega Turrican on the Wii U anymore, or the Wii, so...
No, exactly. Like, there's no affordable way of playing that other than, you know, the illegal ways, Tom. The ways that nobody talks about. I also Ghosts and Goblins Resurrection is out on the 25th.
Ah, yes, okay. I have seen some screenshots of that, and I'm intrigued.
I'm intrigued. It looks a bit rough, though, is my initial impression from what I've seen.
You think it looks a bit budget?
I do. That would be the word I would use, yeah, budget, to describe it. So.
Yeah, redraw over the original sprites, and I don't know if that's the case, but that kind of reminds me of Street Fighter. When they did that reskin of Street Fighter 2 with the Udon characters, it was essentially the same game. They just drew over the sprites with new ones.
Yeah, exactly. And I don't know. I will wait to see. But I'm a bit afraid that it'll just be a bit of a budget game that'll kind of come and go. I'm sure people will like it. I'm sure people will buy it if they are really into that series. But I also kind of can't help but think. Do I really want my ass kicked by a video game badly right now?
I don't know. Maybe they'll add some accessibility options to the game that will make it easier for newcomers. And if it's got that kind of functionality, then perhaps it's worth trying.
Yeah.
Yes, going back to Turrican, just briefly, you get Super Turrican as well. So the two Amiga games, Turrican 1 and 2, Mega Drive, which is a port of Turrican 3 for the Amiga, and Super Turrican. There you go, okay. Just in case you were interested.
That's cool. To be honest, right, I always kind of wish that Render Ranger was on some of these Turrican collections, because, I mean, it's kind of a spiritual sequel.
That's the first I've heard of it.
Oh, right, okay. So Render Ranger is a very, very, very rare Super Famicom title that is developed by the German fellow who developed Turrican, who I can't remember the name of. And for all intents and purposes, it's another Turrican game. From what I hear, though, it's not as good as some of the better Turrican things. It is very much that European Amiga feel to a run-and-gun shooter, but it isn't as... It's very technically impressive for what it does to the Super Famicom, but not really as held in high regard as something like Mega Turrican, And I, as you know, I don't particularly like Magaturigan anyway, so for me that was like, okay, this is enough not to look into this game.
No, but that's a fair point. Why would you want to buy American Turrican again when you weren't a fan game. In the first place? Yeah.
American Turrican is surely just Contra, but I mean, that's even Japanese, so that's a bit of a stretch. I remember seeing copies of Render Ranger, actually, in Otaku Zoku, as it was called at the time, now Super Tomato, in Cardiff. They had one or two copies of that game through that shop. And even back then, it was expensive, but, like, nowhere near as much as it is now. That's literally a £1,000 game, I think, to get a copy of that complete box. It's very, very late Super Famicom release, and very, very limited numbers.
Okay. Yeah, well, yeah. I'll look it up for sure. I mean, I do like a bit of Turrican.
Exactly, Tom. And I mean, you know, if there's no legal way to buy it, then you may as well use those dirty, dirty ways we've talked about that we don't speak of.
Dirty ways.
There's also a Bravely Default 2 is out in February, which I will probably not pick up. I beat the first Bravely Default. Yeah. I really liked it. I bought Bravely Second, and I'm afraid I never played it, so... Unless there is something great about that game that I have not been clued into.
What an interesting numbering system they've chosen there, because Second would imply to me a sequel, like Number 2. And yet now they're releasing another game that's essentially called Number 2 again.
Well, I think that... Well, I mean, it's Final Fantasy, isn't it? Square Enix game.
Oh, yeah.
Final Fantasy X-2 exists, and then Final Fantasy XI is, of course, a completely different game. So I think, from what I've seen, Bravely Default 2 will not have those same characters in the same way that Bravely Second did, if my memory serves. It's been
right,
a while,
so it's a fully new start there.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yakuza Like a Dragon will get its PS5 release on the 2nd of March, according to this listing, which I may pick up if I have a PS5 by that point. Let's see, Tom, because, I mean, I wanted to play that Resident Evil Village... The Maiden, thank you. That I thought it was the Maiden, and then I wasn't quite sure. The Maiden demo, and any time I've looked at that and gone to... Sorry, that was a cat jumping on my desktop. Any time I've gone to look at that and gone, wow, I should play that Resident Evil demo, I've realised, oh yeah, actually, this is just on the PS5, which is not great.
No, that's a shame. I think you can probably experience a lot of that by watching a video of it, though. I'm not sure how interactive it is. I think it was described as some sort of, like, video experience as opposed to...
I know, but I'm sure it looks nice, and to be honest with you, I still kind of want to play it in the same way that I played the Resident Evil 7 demo. So, let's see. Hopefully one day, Tom, I'll get a PS5.
I think you'll get one sooner rather than later.
I don't know, any time I've talked to friends in the UK about getting this, like, I see reports that 70 PS5s went on sale on Tesco's.com and were immediately bought by scalpers. So, let's see.
I was starting to think there's little interest in it, but obviously with it keeps selling out, there's obviously more than enough interest in the PS5.
No, there are definitely a lot of interest in the PS5. I think there is an actual scarcity. Obviously, we are in a global pandemic and these things are being produced and shipped all over the world. But there is also, because of that scarcity, an increased artificial scarcity on top of it by people... Essentially, Tom, from what I understand, the world of limited edition sneakers has evolved in such a strange way, because obviously when you have a drop, as they're called, of shoes, there is only like 700 shoes of this particular...
Yeah.
Collaboration will ever exist. You need to buy them at this date. People who are super into that culture and have built a business around that culture have essentially found nefarious ways to ensure that they get those sneakers and that they can sell them at top end prices after the fact. Yes, there are
raffles. There needs to be more than enough to go around.
There does, but until that exists, until there are literally hundreds and hundreds of these units available to the consumers, what is happening is people are essentially running botnets that are searching these websites and constantly refreshing them. As soon as they come in stock, they're pretty much buying all of them they can.
Oh.
And so that is what's happening, and that's why no one can still get a PS5. I mean, to be fair, I'm in a small market, which is why I can't get a PS5, because, I mean, if you can't if you can't get them for love nor money in big markets like the US or the UK, why would you sell them in Denmark?
So, Matt, do you regret not picking that one up when you saw it?
No, not really, because I still would have paid 700 quid for it. Like, I can get a PlayStation 5 at 700 quid anytime I want. Like, that's not an issue. I just don't want to pay over the odds for it.
Especially since there isn't a lot, really, to keep you playing right now,
no.
At least.
And do you want to know what's really annoying as well while we're having this conversation? I actually have a banner ad for StockX, which is one of the sneaker sites that sells PlayStation 5s at a ridiculous price, actually on mytime.is. Which is always great to know that it's just like, hey, you want a PS5? You wanna? No, I'm not paying you 800 quid. Like, sorry.
No.
It's a matter of principle.
We're not stupid.
Point. No. So I'll eventually get one. Who knows?
But we've been talking a lot about up and coming releases on this episode of the podcast. And that's mainly because before we started, Matt told me he hasn't played too much. And I actually am sort of in the same boat. I haven't played a heck of a lot other than the Balin Wonderland demo. There are a couple of things I have dipped it in and out of on my Switch, which is the only console I have available to me presently.
Yeah.
I can talk about them briefly if you like, Matt.
You can do that. I have dipped in one or two games as well, but I mean, I think they are games I've played a lot, and so I don't really want to talk about them too much.
Okay.
So you lead the way, Tom Parry.
I'm going to start off talking about Super Arcade Racing again, because I'd mentioned I'd picked this up, and this is a Micro Machines type game that's was in a sale not so long ago on the Switch, and it was a game I got to play at EGX some time ago when there was still such a thing as these sort of trade shows or whatever.
Yeah.
So I really enjoy it, and it's held up incredibly well on repeat plays. There's a lot of variety in the tracks, and the upgrading the car keeps me busy as well. And there's about 60 or 70 odd races to complete within the game. So I dip out in and out of it in the evenings, perhaps, and I play like a sequence of races, maybe about 5 or 6 races. And it's really keeping me going. There's actually enough there to keep you playing and winning the medals as well. Each race, you can have up to a 3-star ranking. Obviously, if you finish third, you're going to get 1-star. Finish first, you get 3, for example.
Yeah.
It's pretty straightforward stuff. It's nothing revolutionary. It's just the game plays so well. It is something that's just had me coming back again and again. So if those sort of Micro Machines top-down racing games are your thing, this is one of the better ones out there, and I would recommend it wholeheartedly for anyone who just wants to pick up and play a game on the Switch. It's also got a multiplayer as well. I've not had a chance to try that out. But
okay.
Do try out Super Arcade Racing by Out of the Bit Limited.
Out of the Bit Limited.
They created this particular game. And the other one I was playing, which I'd written off some time ago, was Fight of Animals.
Yeah, you were quite dismissive of this game.
I was incredibly dismissive, and I was unfair. I was being unfair. I was going off my first impression of the game before understanding how the game played. I think we've all been guilty of doing this at some point in our game playing careers.
Never me, Tom Parry. I'm always firm but fair.
But I didn't understand it was a Darkstalkers type, light, medium, heavy attack sort of brawler, as opposed to a more special moves based thing like Street Fighter.
Okay.
There is a special move button. And basically that's like the heavy attack. So, and also if you push in different directions while pressing the heavy attack, you'll do different variations on that move. And then there's a special attack button. So when you build up the meter, you can then use a special attack.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, it's straightforward. It's pretty simple. But actually, once you understand the battle system, it's actually quite satisfying. My major criticism of it initially was the fact that it was the enemies were so relentless.
Yeah.
So, but I stuck it down to easy, learnt the game. Now I'm playing it on normal. I can do it okay on normal. Just remember, you have to block a lot. They're quite aggressive. The opponents are. But what makes this stand out is how hilarious it is. I've not tried out all the characters, and there's a character called Slender Cat, which is an elongated cat, which is hilarious. And I think you should really maybe check out some footage of this game, Matt, because it's quite funny. It's also called Fight of Animals, not Fight of the Animals. It's got this sort of budgetness about it, you know. And I think it was made by a Chinese studio, I think. Okay. So I guess it's got a few like translation issues, which add to its charm, I think. So obviously it was made by a small team, but you have characters like Egg Dog as well,
right?
Which is quite a humorous one. I'm going to just run through some of these character names with you now, as I have to load up the game to remind myself. You've got Power Hook Dog, you've got Crow. Crowrilla, which is a cross between a crow and a gorilla. You've got the imaginatively named Walking Cat.
So is it a crow with wings? Or is it a gorilla with a beak? I can't. Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah, it is. It is, in fact, a gorilla with a beak, but also what looks like feathers.
Yeah.
Interesting. Very interesting.
And Magic Squirrel. Magic Squirrel has sort of like Hadoukens and such. So if you want the sort of closest thing to Street Fighter, try Magic Squirrel. You've got Mighty Fox. You've got Tricky Fox. Slender Cat. There's a picture of Slender Cat.
I'm just showing Matt here. As I imagined him to be, yeah.
Egg Dog is an egg dog, which is a dog shaped like an egg.
That makes sense. That checks out, yeah. This is ridiculous, people at home, for this non-visual media, as you would imagine. Just
look,
give it a Google.
Look it up. Muscle Beluga and Bad Dog. So, each character is substantially different than the last. And it's a fun game, a fun pick-up-and-play game. Don't pay too much for it. It's not worth a lot of money. But I'm actually getting quite a lot of enjoyment out of it.
Okay.
Surprisingly. And as I say, I'd written it off before, so I apologise. The creators of Fight of Animals, your game is rather well done and pretty entertaining.
I'm sure they took it very personally last time.
I'm sure they listened to this podcast. Yeah.
I mean, everyone does, Tom. It's the talk of the town. I don't know. I mean, I had seen this, and like we talked about this, about it, the potential for it to be like a meme fighter. And I'd been slightly dismissive of it. But to be honest with you, my dismissal of this game was solely based on you being like, I really like fighting games, this is rubbish. And I was like, well, if Tom doesn't even like this and can't see any charm in it, then
it's just a different type of fighting game. And it's actually plays quite similar to another Switch fighter, Blade Strangers, if you've come across that one. Has cameos from Shovel Knight and...
that one, yeah, okay. Yeah. As soon as you said cameos from Shovel Knight, I was like, okay, that game, yes, I have.
Yeah, which is a pretty game, nice-looking game. Obviously, a lot of effort put into it. Never grabbed me in terms of its gameplay, but that is because it's a similar type of gameplay too. Fight of Animals. I'm not comparing the two against each other, but
it is definitely a consideration in that.
It's that Darkstalkers type thing, and you know what I mean, don't you? It's like, it's about combos. It's about combining light, medium, heavy attacks together to create combos.
Yeah.
And it's relentless. It's pretty straightforward. It's not Street Fighter. Just don't expect Street Fighter. And games like that, you know, once you adjust to them, I think can be a lot of fun as well. Simpler and less strategic than the fighting games I prefer, but
yeah,
pretty fun.
Yeah, but all the same, it's okay.
Yeah, it's okay. It's good. It's just a different style.
Okay, that's good to know.
Oh, I've also been playing Mortal Kombat 11. Don't know, I forgot about that. On the Xbox, that was. That was a week or so ago I picked that up. But that's good. It's more of the same. There you go. I like the guest characters in it, such as Spawn and Rambo, RoboCop, Terminator.
It's so weird to me, Spawn's in that game. I don't know.
I like Spawn in that game.
I think Spawn, I think Soul Calibur. I can't help it.
Yeah, yeah, no, me too. But he's better in Mortal Kombat. He fits better, I think.
Well, yeah, of course he does. He was always a bit of a weird choice for the Xbox, wasn't he? If we're being honest, like compared to
Heihachi and Link.
Yeah, I mean, it's just strange. And I mean, like, especially when they got like Star Wars characters for the next one. It's just,
yeah,
like,
for Soul Calibur 4. Yeah.
Yeah, why would you put Spawn, like a character that's arguably not really been relevant in the comic book sphere for a long, long time before that?
Let's not even mention Necrid, the original character created by Todd McFarlane for Soul Calibur 2. He's very forgettable, and if you've forgotten about him, then yeah,
I totally
I
did.
Surprised.
I guess no one played as him when we played Soul Calibur 2 back in the day.
Don't bother with Necrid. He is, it's generic as they come.
Wow. I mean, to be fair, right, like the whole Todd McFarlane did his own character in this game thing kind of points out that, hey, like, the people who made Soul Calibur must be massive Todd McFarlane fans and perhaps wanted him involved.
But then they got Necrid and thought, oh, can't you just put a bit more effort into that original character?
Yeah,
Todd?
I mean, hey, that's how it goes.
Like, Todd probably gave it to someone else to design, I would have imagined.
Maybe. I mean, to be fair, though, right, like, this is my brief aside on Todd McFarlane. I like Robert Kirkman. I think that name is less well known as it was when I would say that before. As like, I really like comics by Robert Kirkman. You were still a miss though. Tom, he is the person who did The Walking Dead. He is the person who wrote The Walking Dead. Like, that is his main thing. He also did Invincible, which is my favorite superhero comic. If you haven't checked out Invincible, for the love of God, check it out. It is the best superhero comic. They did a collaboration because a lot of Robert Kirkman stuff came out on Image, which is Todd McFarlane related, and they did a comic together called Haunt. Okay. Essentially, the gist of Haunt is there is a soldier / lethal assassin who gets killed, but because his brother is a priest, somehow, because his brother is praying for him, their souls become entangled.
Ooh, I like this already.
He kind of becomes a symbiote, like, and he looks an awful lot like the kind of like Todd McFarlane Spider-Man symbiote stuff that went on.
Oh, right.
And it's very cool. And that collaboration lasted for about 20 issues. And I was like, this is a really cool comic. And then essentially what happened was Todd McFarlane was like, yeah, I'm too busy to do this. And Robert Kirkman's like, I'm off making billions and millions of dollars from doing The Walking Dead. Perhaps I should focus a bit more on that. And so then it got handed off to two other writers and it lasted like 3 issues because it was clearly not that interesting without those two people.
Well, thanks for that comic book tidbit. It's tidbit.
You have to
be careful not to say
for our non-native English speakers out there. I'm glad you clarified before you go around and go, oh, here's an interesting tidbit for you, and then you get thrown in jail.
Speaking of Tom McFarlane, you familiar with the game McFarlane's Evil Prophecy for PS2?
No, I'm not.
Okay, so this is like a action brawler type beat 'em up game, 3D. And I hadn't heard about it until fairly recently. I just thought I'd mention it because I think it's one of those obscure PS2 games that you don't tend to hear much about.
I have never seen that. I mean, to be fair, the PS2 library is a good 2,000 games long. But every now and again, I see a piece of artwork and I'm like, that must be rare. I've never seen it, and
it's Konami as well. You know, you think you might have heard of that one, but
no,
I thought I would have heard it about it. But it was only through when I was compiling my collection on VG Collect that I came across that, and I was like, "What is that?" And then I found out it wasn't a great game, so I decided not to investigate further.
Fair enough.
And pick up a copy. But there you go.
Hey man, I would say a lot of people would say Gregory Horror Show is not a great game, and I can guarantee you it's worth investigating further. That game has gone up a lot of money now, Tom.
We mention Gregory Horror Show every time we mention the PS2, don't we?
Yeah, I can't help it. It's my hidden gem of the PS2, though I think it's less hidden now because the price is ridiculous.
Well, you know, there's a lot of games you could write off. I wrote off that Altered Beast reimagining for PS2, but actually having played it, it's not bad. Pretty good.
You know
what your standards are.
You know what's really interesting, right, is that I remember having a really passionate rant at you that this game is essentially Gregory Horror Show and you should check it out for that reason. I can't remember what that game was.
Yeah, what was this game?
I can't remember. We talked about it on this very podcast and I told you...
Oh, let
you...
us know in the comments what we talked about in
God.
The previous episode.
Oh my God. Wow, that's interesting.
Because we're not going to listen to him back. No.
Clearly, it meant a lot to me. No, speaking of games that could potentially mean a lot to me in the future, I have been playing the demo of something, which is why I'd also got the... Blinking heck, my memory today is terrible. The Yuji Naka game that looks a lot like Knights.
Balan Wonderland.
Balan Wonderland, thank you. I couldn't remember the first bit. Yeah, I'd ended up downloading Balan Wonderland pretty much after I had purposely gone on to the Japanese store to get myself a demo of a new Nintendo game called Buddy Mission Bond.
What on earth is that, Matthew?
So I had accidentally...
The Japanese store?
It is in the Japanese store, yeah. I had accidentally stumbled across this because the graphic of the cover was quite striking. And I was like, oh, that looks pretty cool. Again, showing this to Tom Parry. The art style reminded me very much of Sin and Punishment. I know it,
yeah,
it is...
Yeah, the green and black...
Yeah,
and also the fact that it looks like a Super Famicom box
it
art
does,
as opposed
yeah.
to a Switch game. Sorry you can't see it, but
no.
What was it called again?
It's called Buddy Mission Bond. And
you can look it up online, Buddy Mission Bond.
Yeah, you can. And essentially what it is, Tom, is an action visual novel in which you play as a
You've lost
a
me already.
Cop. And it... I had been interested in it purely because I was like, oh, this looks interesting. Actually, it's Koei Tecmo. That's weird. It's published by Nintendo, though. It looked really cool. I'd seen it on one of the Japanese directs and gone, oh, that looks interesting. I'd kind of forgotten about it. But the interesting thing is, whereas obviously there have been a lot of games where characters are designed by Mangoku, people who are doing manga like Akira Toriyama or whoever. Okay. The character design in this game is done by Yusuke Maruta?
Okay.
Sorry. The guy who did One Punch Man.
Right.
And
yeah.
I like One Punch Man a lot. He also did Ends in 21. I need to look at this article a second.
21.
Eye Shield 21 is the other manga from him. And I like his character design a lot, and I like his worlds. I don't think the story itself is by him. I think it is apparently by Koei Tecmo. But it is a buddy cop thing. The reason I have been interested in this game for a while was...
How can you read it? Are you a Japanese good enough to read it?
But listen, Tom Parry, there's an ingenious strategy here.
All right.
Essentially, it's a visual novel. It is fully voice acted, which is the thing to me that I was like, oh, that's great. Because I can then listen to the voice acting.
Yeah.
And I had downloaded the demo because I was thinking, looking at the trailer, I was like, well, there's a lot of kanji here I don't recognize. Am I going to be able to read this? And I'm actually probably going to put a video together on this because I've figured out an ingenious way, though it does require some time and patience, obviously, because you're literally translating the game as you play, to play this game.
Okay.
Essentially, because obviously everything is fully voice acted and you have text on screen, it is quite good listening practice for me to sit down with my headphones on, listen to the audio, and then try and type what I've just heard, looking at the screen, so obviously I know what is hiragana, what is kanji, to try and figure out, okay, this is how I should do this and how I should translate it. The great thing about, I'll just refer to it as Bond, even though I don't have to say Buddy Mission Bond every time. The good thing about Bond is it has the ability to, much like every other visual novel, you can press the Y button and it gives you your history of what's been said.
Right.
Beautifully, this game also allows you to replay the dialogue. So you can re-listen to the sentences that have been said.
Oh, for learning a language, that's fantastic.
It is ace. And so I was just like, okay, so I've pretty much played the game, Switch in one hand and then a laptop in front of me in Google Translate. Now, the handy dandy thing is, my Japanese comprehension, obviously, like, I can listen to Japanese, but sometimes when it is an impassioned bit of speech or it's whispered, I'm like, okay, my ear is not trained enough to do this. I can use Google Translate on my phone, use the scan functionality in the Google Translate app, point it at the text on the screen, highlight the kanji that I'm unsure of, and then it will give me a translation for that, and so I can type it. Also, a brilliant thing that I realized...
Sounds like a lot of effort.
Hey, man, but it's working so far, and I think it's actually quite a nice way to learn Japanese and quite cool, is that Microsoft Word has in its formatting the ability to add furigana to kanji if you wanted to. So I can type this stuff into Word, which is then like training my brain to be like, okay, this sentence is, for example, let me quickly read one that I prepared earlier. I literally have started translating everything. So I'd even done some of like the warning and some of the small iconography stuff, like B to close, for example, you know, just like anything that came on screen, there was a command, I would translate and go, right, okay, how does this work? What does this kanji mean? So, koko ni kurima de no igata, which means until you came here. Like, it's part of another sentence. It's like, until you came here, nothing was wrong, da 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 da. But I was able to look at that and go, well, I know koko ni is like this, like here now. Unable to do that and go, okay, well, I recognize kuru to come, like I recognize that kanji. And I was like, okay, well, I don't recognize this last one. And I was able to, through that, just quickly write up the sentence, able to add this furigana to the top of it. So now I have a visual reference. So I can go, oh, great, this is what this means. Yeah. And from there, the hope is I can eventually do some flashcards and stuff. And I was like, oh, this is actually a really good way to learn Japanese. And I think it's perhaps one of the best examples of being able to do this. Like, obviously, I have, like every other Japanese learner, I think, ended up picking up books and manga and trying to watch Japanese TV shows and everything else. But this is actually a really, really good method of doing it, because I can just keep listening to what is being said and like embed it in my head while I'm reading it. So I'm like enforcing the listening
in
two ways.
Great. Reminds me of when I'm doing some lessons in my Japanese book, and it comes with a CD, and you've got a dialogue, and you have the CD and the dialogue written, and you're just repeating the CD track over and over again. And that's the only way I can do it. I can never get it on first listen. It's just, I find a lot of the time when you hear Japanese being spoken, obviously it's fast.
Yeah.
There was something I saw recently, though, where someone was talking really slow in Japanese, and it was fantastic. I don't know what it was. It was on a film or a TV show or a game or something. I was like, wow, I wish all Japanese is spoken like this, and I might actually be able to
There is a understand. Podcast, Tom Parry, that I will recommend to you, that I listen to. And obviously, if any listeners are obviously interested in speaking Japanese, I think this is a great beginner podcast. I'm just going to quickly go into my podcast. It is called Nippon no Tenpai. I just can't remember the name of the guy who does it. Oh, this is really annoying. Spotify doesn't just immediately give you a, hey, here's your podcasts thing.
Oh, by the way, we're available on Spotify now. If you want,
we are available on Spotify. You should listen to us there, because, you know, that's how it goes. Oh, this is really annoying. I wanted to just be able to go, this is this podcast. But as I've subscribed to more and more podcasts, there we go. Thank you. If you search in Spotify on their podcasts, there is a podcast called Japanese Podcast for Beginners, Nihongo non Tepe. And it has this adorable, like, weird Santa's little helper, gopher, hamster. Yeah. I don't quite know what he is, but it is basic Japanese spoken at a very slow pace.
Wonderful.
So it's like this. So it says, "Watashi wa tepe desu." And it's just like, admittedly, it is super slow. And I think perhaps if you are more an intermediate learner of Japanese, you can like click it up to 1.5 speed. And I think it would perhaps speed it back up to what it is. I think I'm exaggerating a little bit. But it's actually a really good learning resource. Right. Anyway, that was our Japanese Minute, Tom. I think this
Yeah,
game
we do
seems...
tend to have these every now and again.
I mean, I think it's because we're both learning Japanese, and I think for me in particular, like I said, I'm trying to play as many games as I can this year in Japanese for this very
actually,
reason.
I was only watching a retro Digital Foundry video. I don't know if you've seen it, about Wild Arms 5.
No, I haven't.
And they're playing, I think 5 hours video this is, but they're playing the game and they're pointing out that the Japanese dialogue in the game has furigana.
Yeah.
That's correct, yeah? The translation of the kanji into hiragana within the actual game text. So I think that's cool. Really helpful, and not often you come across a game with that.
No, and I mean, especially if that's all the way through, that's amazing.
Like, yes. Yeah.
I can't remember if I've talked about it in this podcast before. Like, I have tried to read manga, and obviously manga is just short chunks. But for me, when I started trying to do that with Yotsuba and Doraemon and some of these more slice of life / child-friendly manga, a lot of it was on the assumption that you... were able to speak Japanese and therefore you knew short forms of things a lot more than I did at the time. Like, have you gone past the point in your Japanese learning, Tom, where you've realized that every sentence in Japanese doesn't end with des and mas?
I think I realize that is the case, yes.
Yeah.
And so
a lot of manga just ends in like... anytime I'm watching One Piece at the moment, like, Luffy is just like, the translation is like, give me meat, or I want meat. And it's just like, niku da, which is like, niku, which is meat in short form. But like, so much is implied by him just saying like, niku da, like, give me meat. That it's very hard as a non-native speaker, especially when I didn't really know short form and I still struggle with it a bit, to read manga. And so... a lot of this game so far, because it is a police procedural, is written in somewhat like formal Japanese. And I think it's been great for that. Yeah. But it also, like, it gives you the audio version. Like, you can actually listen to it. And so I'm not going a lot into translate and whatever as much as I am when I'm reading a book. When I'm reading a book, I'm like, right, okay, I know this kanji, I know this. I have no idea what this means. Oh shit, this is in short form because it's speech between people rather than formal, and trying to do a lot of this stuff. Manga is better than books, obviously, because you have the visual element to it, and I even found that when I was learning Danish that I would try and read like Anna's And, as they call it here, Donald Duck.
Yeah.
But I think this game is particularly great. I think that more games I can find that have furigana would be amazing, so I may actually check out Wild Arms 5.
Wild
now.
Arms 5. It's meant to be better than Wild Arms 4, apparently.
I wouldn't doubt it. Wild Arms 3 was okay. I quite enjoyed Wild Arms 3. I never played 2. Did 2 even come out in the West?
My knowledge of Wild Arms, I'm afraid,
I was going to say, I realise I'm asking you, who, you know, is not really the wunderkind in knowing JRPGs, but...
Is Wild Arms on the PlayStation Classic console?
I believe so, yes. The first Wild Arms is definitely a PS1 game.
Well,
I'll
give that a go sometime.
I quite liked Wild Arms 1 when it came out. I don't know how it will have aged, but that is definitely a cult classic.
Yeah. Looks like a very traditional JRPG to me, at least.
Yeah, it's kind of... I like
the
Western
it could have been
slant.
On the Super Nintendo as opposed to the PlayStation.
Yeah, and I think there's some lineage there between people making Super Nintendo games and that. I can't quite remember. It's been an awful long time since I've thought about Wild Arms, to be honest with you, until you mentioned this. I just know 4 and 5 are ridiculously expensive in Europe, so I've never owned them, but...
Maybe get the Japanese version of 5.
Well, I mean, from the sounds of things, that would be great. But again, it'll be a lot of reading versus like a lot of listening, which I think this game tops off quite well.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, I also started playing Final Fantasy 14 a little bit, as I've previously mentioned on the podcast. I switched classes, though. I realised that with Stormblood, which is the not the last expansion that came out, but the one before it, that you can play as a samurai. And I was like, well, I was in some kind of duty and a sword dropped. And I was like, oh, maybe I'll try samurai because it launched this expansion. At least you start at level 50 as opposed to level 1.
Yeah, and Ghost of Tsushima maybe influenced you there.
Maybe, but to be fair, it was more because I was just like, I asked in my group of friends who plays, I was like, what's samurai like? And they're like, it is my default class, it's really fun. And I was like, oh, well, maybe I'll give it a go. And then I've enjoyed playing samurai so much that I found myself in the awkward position, I don't really want to play Black Mage anymore. Even though I'm like a level 68 Black Mage, I need to play as Black Mage to continue the story because I'm only a level 54 samurai.
What a predicament.
And I don't really want to go and grind levels. And so I'm just like, oh, well, maybe Final Fantasy 14 is my once in a while game. Now I play with friends to level up a little bit. And then that's it. So I don't know. It's going to put me in an awkward predicament, but I think playing Buddy Mission Bond when that actually arrives, because off the strength of this demo alone, I ordered a copy from Amazon Japan. I think I'll be playing a lot of that, and I think I'll reveal a little bit of the story and stuff next week, because at the moment I'm very, very early on, because obviously this is taking a while to do. So
have you picked up any other games recently, or was that your only purchase?
I mean, I picked up some Japanese Game Boy games, surprise, surprise, but nothing of note that I'm going to mention on this podcast. I bought some stuff that was very well priced locally as opposed to being very expensive on eBay and stuff. So it's nothing too spectacular. Just JRPGs that I don't think I'm ever going to play unless I get to a good enough level of Japanese. So let's see.
Okay. I did the Japanese game. What's it called? Everything and Nothing, the James Bond game on PS2. I was interested in this because they replaced the regular Bond girl of the game with a Japanese Bond girl. And I was interested to see how they tackled that in-game.
Yeah.
Actually replacing an entire character and putting in a brand new one, I thought, because I'm reasonably familiar with Everything and Nothing because I've got it on the Xbox. But yeah. I was interested to see how they would deal with that and how the interactions maybe would differ. It would just be like a reskin for the character. And they act totally the same. The story's totally the same. They just look
probably
different,
so. I imagine that will be the case.
I imagine that'll be the case. But it's a good game. And I thought I'd get the PS2 copy. Bit of a curiosity.
I imagine it's very cheap. Like you know me, I had the same fascination with Wolfenstein when I was just like, what, in Germany they're taking out all of the Nazi stuff? How the hell do you do a Wolfenstein game without any Nazi stuff? But I mean, it is just reskins. It just means that instead of swastikas, you've got eagles on everything and whatever. Like, it's
but
interesting.
This game could potentially have Bond with Japanese voice acting.
That's true. It might do.
Maybe. Or the voice acting is exactly the same. So that might be the case. Well, we'll see. I could have easily looked up a video online, couldn't I? But no, I decided to pick up the game instead.
I'll be curious to see. When that comes
I'll report back to you on this very podcast about that. Elsewhere, I bought Joker's Wild for the CDI.
Right.
Joker's Wild is a quiz show. And I don't have a game of that type on the CDI. I thought it could be quite fun. I thought the CDI would lend itself quite well to a quiz show format with FMV sequences, perhaps.
Yeah.
Not a game you hear about often.
To be fair, like any time I cover any stuff with, you know, like Game Boy, like lingo and stuff, unless it's Wheel of Fortune, I don't think anyone really is aware of a lot of these things. I'm quite partial to Bullseye on the Commodore 64. I remember having
Bullseye
playing that. Yeah, there's a Bullseye game for the C64 where you answer trivia questions and then you get like a really rudimentary darts game. It's definitely a Commodore game though, so like that's the catch there. I was just gonna say like it doesn't surprise me that I haven't heard of this.
I only heard about it fairly recently. But the game I did pick up for Super Nintendo not so long ago was Speedy Gonzales. Los Gatos Banditos, it's called.
Is that by Sunsoft?
And I think it might be by Sunsoft. But what drew my attention to it was I watched a video. It was a Sonic hack, I think, and it had used this game as its basis. And it looked like a Sonic game. And being a Sonic fan, I thought, wow, I want to try this. And it's very good.
I mean,
lovely visuals.
That doesn't surprise me, because even the Game Boy Sonic game I have is based on the Speedy Gonzales Sunsoft game.
It's Sunsoft. And it's great in... there's some great Warner Brothers Looney Tunes games available. I think I have Porky Pig's Nightmare also on the Super Nintendo, and that's another great game. Quite different from this one, but also quite... I could recommend that one as well.
I mean, there's lots of stuff that's made by Sunsoft, which is why it's good. Like, I mean, the Looney Tunes game on the Game Boy is kind of like a weird mashup of different genres and stuff. Like, there's Porky Pig in a flying level, and then there's some auto-scrolling levels, and there's... Like, Sunsoft did some cool stuff, and I think there was a lot of good stuff around the Looney Tunes at that time. Even things like Taz Escapes from Mars and stuff.
Yes, I have that, yeah.
For the Mega Drive. Probably aren't that great now in hindsight, but I remember having a lot of fun playing them back in the day.
I think, a lot of them look really well animated as well. Yeah. And that was one of the draws for me. I remember really wanting Daffy Duck in Hollywood for the Master System.
Yeah.
But I ended up choosing Sonic Chaos at the time. I could pick one or the other, and I went for Sonic Chaos, which I don't regret. But
no,
I've never played Daffy Duck in Hollywood. And I do like Daffy Duck. I've always been more of a Looney Tunes guy than a Disney Mickey. And
yeah, Co. Likewise. I think it's because, generally speaking, though, like a lot of the Warner Brothers stuff was definitely more humorous, right? Like,
oh yeah, for sure. I would have a double video cassette of all the old Looney Tunes cartoons that I'd watch quite often. Same with Tom and Jerry as well.
Yeah, I mean...
Which has been many games about Tom and Jerry too. We should maybe do that as a little feature sometime, I don't know.
We could do that, we could look into that.
Yeah.
Okay, well, despite us not playing anything, we've managed to...
Managed to waffle on for over an hour.
I was going to say, apologies, dear listener, if this was a bit of a boring podcast, but it was fun to talk to you, Tom, and it's fun to talk about all this stuff, and that's kind of, hopefully, some of that energy has resonated through this podcast into your listening ears.
I think it was an informative podcast. If you were, curious what games are coming out soon, we've definitely covered that. If you want to know a bit more about learning Japanese and playing video games, we've covered that as well.
That's true. You
didn't know Joker's Wild was available as a CDI game, then you now know that too. So I think we've done a service to
our
listeners.
We've done our service, exactly. If you've enjoyed listening to this podcast and, want to share it with friends, you could do so in a variety of places. Maybe go back to the Wii retrospective episode, though. I don't know. I've been touting that one.
I was introducing a friend. Well, I mentioned to a friend I did a podcast, and if they care to listen to it, maybe you try the Wii episode, because it was fairly meaty.
It was something to wrap your teeth around. Yeah. Or your ears, in this case. You can find us in a variety of places, as I mentioned, on blastprocess.com, on tomandmatttack.com/podcast, on Facebook at facebook.com/tomandmatttack, on Twitter, me at Game Boyle, Tom at TomParry11, and us collectively at TMAcast. You can also listen to the podcast in those previously mentioned places, as well as in iTunes, Stitcher, and now Spotify, who still don't sponsor the podcast. While you're there, why not give us a cheeky rate and subscribe? Let us know you're listening. Thomas, it's been a pleasure. I will love you and leave you, because the sun has actually gone out behind clouds, and I would like to go and embrace the day and not just translate Japanese all afternoon. Fair enough, Matt. Okay, mate. Lovely to talk to you, and always, listeners, lovely to talk to you. Be sure to game on.
Game on.